You're listening to The God Journey, a place where people thinking outside the box of organized religion can share thoughts and conversation along the journey. Here are your hosts and fellow travelers, Wayne Jacobson and Brad Cummings.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And that's another sacred cow biting the dust.
Another one bites the dust.
Hey, no boom, singing. Boom, no singing.
I'm so thrilled. I got that in my inbox last night. I turned it on, and I just burst out laughing. I thought that was absolutely fantastic. Alleluia.
And we have Glenn to thank from down in Orange County.
Good job,
County.
Glenn.
Ah, we love the creative stuff that's out there from you folks. So
keep it coming.
Keep the cards and letters. What are you getting, cards and letters? whatever. Keep it coming.
I got a card.
You did?
I did. I just won, but I got a card.
From?
Ada. Thanks, Ada. Keep those cards coming.
That's sweet.
So what's happening today, Wayne?
Well, we had fun on the Spiritual Warfare podcast.
Yeah. You got a couple dings.
And the I don't feel ding.
I read the form. You got a couple dings.
Well, okay. You had three.
No, I didn't. I was named as the voice of reason.
Well, I think you were accused of backing down to the imperial dynasty that is
no,
me.
No, just being polite.
No, actually, great discussions on the forum from some of what we talked about. I think there's a little bit of a problem with the term spiritual warfare and the way we used it and the way some people perceive it, and maybe some misunderstandings about how we think of it.
Yeah, I think some people went, but there are casting out demons. And, you know, I would kind of put those in two different realms that there are demons to be cast out. Have done it, don't really enjoy it, but I'm happy for the freedom that results in people's lives. And to some degree, there's a measure of that is spiritual warfare. But that's more the individual sanctification realms of people's lives. I think the kind of discussion we were having was more in the second heaven realm of intercessory warfare, where it's
principalities and powers,
yeah,
and prayer walks in high places. I think you're right. I started watching. Someone told us we should see The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which is a movie that was out, I guess, a year or so ago. We rented the DVD.
And how'd that work out for you?
Well, Sarah spent most of the night under the couch.
Under the couch?
Yeah. People told me it wasn't a sensational thriller kind of thing. It was a courtroom drama about this priest that was based on a true story. That this gal had died in the context of an exorcism, a 19-year-old woman. And the priest was on trial for it. And I find that fascinating. So the court scenes, yeah, I found that fascinating, trying to think through all that. But, boy, some of the terrorizing moments of this gal being demon-possessed, do I really believe in that stuff? Maybe not the way Hollywood does it. Sarah and I were talking about that, like, because we've helped people through demonic bondages and find freedom. And it's never as sensational as Hollywood makes it, but it is – it is definitely tense. It is. We've seen people go catatonic. We've seen people just go stiff, and we've seen people scream and shriek and try and bite. I mean, yeah, demonic possession, oppression, however you want to define it,
isation
is a real deal, and
yeah.
Jesus' power deals with it. And if there's anything we said in the podcast last week that pointed people away from that, we would step back and say, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa."
No, I think you'd have to misunderstand. Understand a little bit of what we were talking about.
Or we use the terms differently. Some people think of demonic deliverance as spiritual warfare, and I can't fault that terminology at all, but that's just not the way we were using it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's interesting. I spent a season of time, especially when I was at seminary, spent about probably 3-4 years working and doing a fair amount of ministry within the realm of deliverance stuff, and so I feel pretty adept at understanding that. And I think what is sometimes disconcerting, especially with the way Hollywood presents it, is that the thing I enjoyed so much is recognizing that the demons understand the power of Jesus, and they bow. I mean, you'll get an occasional one that seems to be really strong and entrenched
and
because
defiant,
of stuff that's happened in someone's life. But the reality is I just would get thrilled recognizing that, you know what? Our God reigns supreme, and it is a victory that has been won. And I recognize that, you know what, the challenge is really bringing my life into a place where I understand the victory that was accomplished on the cross. And when that starts to take hold, spiritual warfare doesn't seem to be such a big prominent deal It's you begin to recognize, you know what? I am on the side of he who wins, and we get to walk that out. And the supremacy of love, I think one of the best encounters I ever had one time was I had a bunch one of the best encounters I ever had was we were at this little youth conference, and I had a bunch of little young people with me in tow, and all of a sudden this girl over in the corner did start to manifest a demon, and she was in pain, and she was writhing on the floor, and my little group of folks started to just totally freak out. I mean, they didn't know what in the world to do. It was like, ah! And, you know, one of the guys, you know, decided to pull out his sacred weapon, which was the gift of tongues. So he started just like, and he just went off on her. And it sounded like he was using a machine gun on her. And nothing was happening. I mean, and I stepped into it. I said, does anybody know this girl's name? She's a total stranger to me. And no one had stopped to try to find it. I said, you know what? Whatever's going on, this is a person that needs to be loved. And so I was able to ask her name. I said, has anything of this ever happened to you? And, I mean, this was – she had never encountered anything like this. This was freaking her out. And at the end of the day, long story short, there wasn't a whole lot I could do, but I just reached out and I just hugged her. And you could just feel all of a sudden it's like her body went limp. And the power of love simply expressed through just a genuine, innocent little hug – all of a sudden was what won the day. And I just I that was such a profound lesson to me when you just look at the supremacy of love as ministered by Jesus Christ into someone's life. If we can be more effectual at demonstrating that, I think we'll win a whole lot more wars.
Yeah, I think it helps to demystify that whole arena, because the way Hollywood does it with, first of all, everything is always dark and scary, and there's noise going on.
Got to have holy water.
And then, you know, we've never helped people find freedom in this area where we've had that really spooky music going on in the background, because that always heightens the moment. But
and usually the priest is running because he's been attacked and he's scared.
Oh, like, this one doesn't. This guy's a pretty good guy. He actually hangs in there pretty tight. And, I mean, I didn't care for the answers that the movie resolved. But, I mean, I do appreciate the fact that there are people that are in bondages that are greater than just can be explained by natural things. But I do think always the natural things ought to be checked out, too. We did have one instance on the forum, I think, of someone whose daughter was trying to be delivered of things, and it probably wasn't a deliverance need at all. It was probably something medical. And I just think the whole abuse of that, because people don't think broadly and listen carefully, and we begin to make – it was a big book out when I was young, Pigs in the Parlor. You know, people were getting 150 demons cast out of them, and it was almost like it was easier to get a demon cast out than to let Jesus transform you. And what I like about the way Jesus handled it is that he didn't draw attention to it. He didn't make it more mystical. He just dealt with it. And when crowds started coming around, a demon possessed somebody or other, he would deal with it quickly and get it out of the way. He didn't make it a show. And I just don't think it ought to be a show. That's why we don't talk about it a lot. I like what you said about our life in Jesus becomes the more real thing. And if demonic stuff is there, then deal with it. And you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to be proficient. I've never taken a class in, you know, demonic deliverance. I just get in, obey Jesus, help somebody get whole, move on. And I do think it's that simple. And we ought not be scared of it. But, boy, I don't think we ought to draw attention to it either all the time.
No, I think the thing I'd recognized that wasn't all that attractive is some of the people that this was their specialty and their focus, they seemed to be more aware of what the devil was doing than really they were at times what Jesus was doing. And I just recognized for me and for my life, I felt, you know what? I want Jesus to be center stage in what's going on. I want to be more aware of what he is and who he is and what he's doing in my life than all the different thousand ways you can get demonized.
Yeah, so we want to thank you guys who posted on the forum about it and had some more dialogue. And this is about an ever-expanding conversation.
And my gosh, it really is.
And not just interviewing folks. It really is having people participate in the forum. And I think Brad and I both, we talked about this a little bit this morning before we got started. We have really appreciated, to date, the spirit of that forum. People are asking some wonderful questions. And people are sorting out some answers and things together, but no one's gotten abusive and nasty, and no one's kind of taken over as the forum expert, which on a lot of these things does become a problem. And we're just grateful. I think the answers and the discovery is tender. I think people feel free to open up some pretty deep things in their life. So if you're missing that part of it, you're missing one of the best parts of this podcast, I think. You can find that by going to thegodjourney.com, clicking on forums, and have a read.
There's a lot of just great discussion thread lines that are going on. And I think what was so exciting to me is that it's been an environment that's safe enough for people to feel like they can ask some genuine questions that in a lot of other arenas, they sort of felt like they didn't have the freedom to ask. And I think that's what really excited me. We're just going like, you know what? We need to be able to talk fully and freely with what's really going on. Yeah. And, you know, sure, there's some off the wall stuff that, you know, appears every now and then. And I won't name anything.
I think that's why.
But I think that the wonderful thing is I do enjoy the kind response that sometimes comes to sort of bring things a little back, you know, more center.
Yep. And there's a good sense of humor about it and a good sense of people struggling honestly. And we think that's fabulous. One of the topics that came up very early when we opened the forum is, why don't you guys talk about singles? And part of the reason is because
we're not
haven't been single for a long time, but we've actually tried to find some singles that might be willing to come onto a podcast and actually talk about this with us. And we haven't really landed on who that might be yet, but we did get a letter this week from Lori and an email. And Lori brings up the issue again, as many have on the forum. I thought she did it in a way that might give us the ability to talk about some of these things. And then again, in the forum area, some of you who are single, who actually are living some of this, and we're going to talk beyond singles. We're actually going to talk about what about other family dynamics that have to do with on this journey and whether or not your spouse is with you or not with you and how do you connect with other people. Because what she asks is, I have lots of thoughts and questions about being single on this journey out of organized religion. Perhaps you guys have some single friends who have shared their hearts with you. Any thoughts, any encouragement? And she began this way. I'd like to hear your thoughts on singles out of the box. I crave to be part of the we instead of just a me, not only in the sense of having a significant other, but a group of folks in real relationship. So many of the interviews you've shared are with people who are part of a loving Christian community. And I love the sense of a group of folks moving together on the journey, people who pop in on each other without an appointment. A man, wife, slash family out there together, even if they're not in community with others, would also be much more appealing than being alone. What do you think, Brad? How do we I can appreciate what she's saying and what she's feeling. And I think it'd be a lot of married folks saying, yeah, we feel alone too. We feel like, and you hear it on the forum all the time. We've been out of this thing. We can't find folks in our area that share this journey. And
I don't always think that spouses are necessarily walking hand in hand in full agreement. I think, you know, I think even on the forum, there's a couple of folks that just sort of, you know, have shared their own sort of pain and a little bit of frustration of just realizing that what God is doing in them versus what he's doing in their spouse, they're not the same.
Well, it's kind of a grass is greener kind of a thing. If you're single, you kind of see the advantages that married couples have. If you're married couples and you're not sharing this journey, and it may even appoint attention in your home, they're going to say, man, it might be nice to be single and not have the wife and kids to think about when you're making some major choices that may have some major ramifications. So I do think, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7, let each one accept the place that they're in and don't look for that to be changed, but look for God's life. If you're single, be single to the Lord and let God deal with that. And if you're married even to an unbeliever, then don't look for that to change. Live. And I think the invitation is still live full where you are. This is the middle of a chapter, not the end of a story. I think part of some of the things we talked about before, this imagined future of trying to think about my life in the future. If I'm going to, you know, being single today or being in a struggling marriage today may not be the issue. So when I start thinking about, I'm going to be in this forever, I'm going to be in this for the next 10, 15 years, that gets overwhelming.
Yeah, and that can kind of snowball into the wrong territory. I think one of the biggest challenges is I don't think either you or I are going to provide any, quote, effectual answers.
Oh, my gosh,
struggle.
I had a whole box of them.
Okay, at least I hadn't had any prepared. I think we're talking about a tension of a dynamic and a relationship that, you know, when you're single, depending on what age, you know, I think the younger ones tend to burn a little more, and some of the they're single.
Burn?
Yeah. Well, some lust-filled sort of dynamics, some sexual tension.
Really?
Things. Yeah, well,
wow.
I pastored a whole bunch of young adults, and I'm fully aware of the Christian dating scene and what goes on there. I think one of the biggest challenges, though, is that sometimes for older singles, I mean, I'll get phone calls from both men and women who are like in their late 30s, their 40s, and that's not older. That's not older. I just relax.
I was going to say, I'm older.
He gave me a look. But I think there's a different dynamic there because there is sort of an accrued sense of loneliness, and there's a pain with that because you're just going like, gosh, has this whole marriage domain that perhaps they long for, has that passed me up? And you're just going like, you know, I don't think you can answer that, and I think that's a legitimate fear that causes pain. But again, it's sort of like, you know what? That's something you're going to have to walk out day to day with Jesus. And the biggest challenge in this journey is, I think, twofold. I look at a lot of what God needs to do in people, and I think there is almost a period of isolation that can be an incubator for the kind of intimacy that we're meant to find with Jesus. That's positive. I know that it can be. I know a lot of times when I get phone calls or conversations where people are feeling that sense of, but I feel lonely, one of the first things I do is, like, you know what? Because I don't really have control over that, the one thing I can do is I can direct you towards the positive fruit that can be cultivated in that, which is really cultivating that sense of tangible friendship with Jesus. Because I think a lot of times that's just language for people. They really don't have a sense of relational satisfaction that they find in their walk with the Lord. And there's no quick way to accomplish that. I can't wave my hand over your head and boom, there's intimacy. It's like that friendship is grown over time. And so one of the things that I recognize, whether you're married or single, is that there can be a real purposeful period where you are kind of just walking this, me and Jesus. I don't think he wants us to stay there at all. But I think sometimes we need to be there to forge that kind of friendship.
Yeah, as the world often says about the marriage relationship, the love relationship, anyway, you complete me, which is absolutely the most absurd.
Yeah, it's like not very well. At least I know I don't do that for my wife.
That creates a fantasy that just absolutely is ridiculous. I think if we're not growing in completeness in Jesus, we'll not be growing into some kind of completeness in relationship either. At the same token, I wouldn't want people to get the idea, look, until you get the God thing right, you're not going to get a spouse or significant other in your life. Because if you had to be perfect to get married, then none of us would ever have gotten married. And so I do appreciate it. Because I went to college. I tell you, my greatest fear growing up in high school and college, and people still berate me for this at the time who knew me back then. Because my greatest fear growing up in the early 70s, as I was getting through high school into college, was that because everybody's talking about Jesus coming again before 75 or whatever. My biggest fear is that Jesus would come again before I got married. I can never remember not wanting to be married.
And why was that, Wayne?
I don't know. Maybe burning. I have no idea.
You wanted have legitimate sex before Jesus returned, huh?
Any kind would. I wanted to know what that was like, and I grew up in one of those environments where you just didn't do it outside of marriage. I mean, you know, for me, you throw one match out a window, the whole forest burns down. So, I mean, the fear that I grew up with, you wouldn't even think about it. And we didn't, Sarah and I, when we were dating. So, yeah, there was that desire to be married, to find out what sex was all about. But it was also the joy of being married to having a partner. I understand people who want that. I do.
Yeah.
God, even at the creation, it's not good for man to be alone, or woman either, for that matter. I think there's a deal where there's the desire to walk together and to share life. But marriage, like anything else, if it's good, it's really good in terms of the partnership. And if it's not good, then it's a painful thing in someone's life every day. Marriage can be, particularly a broken marriage, the most difficult thing to live with every day. And so a part of it is, you know, not just being married or finding a spouse, is finding a partner that people can live with for life, and doesn't mean that they're compatible. I think compatibility is kind of a funny comment, because Sarah and I, 31 now years into this marriage, Sarah and I are not the same people that we married, and we joke about it sometimes, you know, false advertising, you led me to believe you, because neither one of us are the same person, neither one of us are on the same journey, neither one of us are living the same life in Christ. We even dreamed about when we were dating, and we dated 3.5 years before we got married. But Sarah and I have always had a wonderful way to somehow walk together even if our conclusions and things we saw weren't the same. I mean, we haven't always agreed on everything, but we've kept walking together, respecting each other to see it differently. And at big moments, God seems to always bring us back to a very, very similar page together, and we can walk that out. And I've been very grateful for that, but I know a lot of marriages that don't have that.
You can't compartmentalize any of this. You know, I think there's aspects that there's sides to my walk with the Lord that, you know, frankly, I don't really share with anybody, not because there's, oh, some secret. You're just going like, I don't really have a need or desire. There's some elements that you're just going like, Lord, I just love the fact that you know. But then there are other parts of my life that I desperately want to be able to share with Kelly, my wife. And if I couldn't share that, there'd be an ache. There'd be a hurt. There's like, no, anyway, that's meant to be shared. And I don't know that that's just for the context of if you're married. I think relationship, life and relationship, when God says it's not good for man to be alone, I don't think it was just, and that means everyone should be married.
Right.
I think there's a corporate dynamic that there's things about God I've only discovered in relationship that is shared with others. You know, that I wouldn't know about God if it wasn't for the reflected glory I see in other relationships, or that shared encounter of an understanding or a revelation of what God is and is doing. And so I think when you look at this whole thing, we need to be growing in our capacity to meaningfully relate to people. And wherever you find someone that is just sort of feeling isolated by themselves, it's like, someone wrote, the only fellowship that I find is in the box, so to speak, and they're talking about the institutional church. And I'm just going like, gosh, unless you are sitting home alone and you don't even get your mail delivered personally, you know, from the mailman, I can't imagine living where you do not have some kind of contact with other human beings. That would be painful. That'd be challenging.
And if not, there's certainly some things you can do about that. One of the posts on the forum talked about, I found it much easier to remove all the labels, you know, in the box, out of the box. I find my relationships have grown with people because I'm not just with certain kinds of people. And I think if I were single today, and I don't mean at 51 because Sarah and I have both talked about we probably wouldn't do this again if something happened to one or the other of us. But if I were younger again, and if you want to meet people, and if you're interested in finding folks, relationships is something you can be intentional about. I know there's this constant struggle between what do I do that's my human effort to fulfill what God wants, and what do I do in response to Him and not just be a couch potato hoping that, you know, if God wants me to have a spouse, one will knock on the door saying, God sent me here to marry you. I do think that people who have spilled out of the institution, for instance, or spilled out of religious systems, and they may feel lonely because they don't know how to build relationships, is because, honestly, we never learned to do it there. We were in the same building for meetings, and you may or may not have had relationships out of that, but we never learned to really build relationships there because it wasn't about relationships. It was about the meeting and the ritual and the rules. And I think we've really missed how to be real, how to connect with people, how to relate to folks at work, to relate to folks just around our lives, our neighborhood. And I think a big part of this journey of relationships is not that we're on this freaked out, trying to, by human effort, build a bunch of relationships, but that I'm very aware every day of who God might be connecting me to, or where He might be asking me to go, or the people I meet or connect with. And I know when we first moved to Oxnard, one of the things that God put on my heart, which is how you and I met. I was at an institutional kind of arrangement. They'd lost a pastor. It was a group of folks trying to be a fellowship without a pastor. And I felt like God asked us to hang out with them a bit. And we did. And we had a ball. We met some people that the relationships of that have continued way past that thing now no longer exists. It kind of imploded of its own weight inside of it. But I tell you what, I think relationships is something, if God's relational and very intentional about building relationships, then we have, as we grow to know Him, He's going to lead us to that same thing. And there's an act, I think, building relationship with your wife that shares a journey, whether or not she still wants to go to the institution and you don't, or he does and you don't. I think there's a way of still honoring the relationship, even if you're not on the same page about what we want to do, that allows it to grow. I think there's ways to relate to people at work, on the job, in our lives, in our neighborhoods, that allow relationships to grow. And I think that's a big part of what we've interviewed with people who are having these great community relationships in various places around the world. They've paid a price for that to happen. That just didn't appear on their doorstep one day.
Yeah, and you know, you look at what's going on in our culture and just the proliferation of internet dating sites, and I got to believe that one of the commentaries you can draw out of all that is our culture is fragmented and by leaps and bounds. There, people are not knowing how to relate very well all over the place. And especially it's like this whole sense of signals where it's like, you know, somehow I'm going to do this bunch of blurbs on the computer and stuff like that. You're just going like, well, God bless eHarmony and whatever else is going on. But the reality is...
Are they paying for advertising?
No. not for this ad. but the reality is I think a lot of times people have a difficulty in relation. Now, this is generalization, but... When there's an agenda attached to a relationship where I am coming at this to get something, I don't think those relationships ever work well. I think there's almost like a magnetism in the air that is almost, you know, makes me want to pull back from that. I think one of the best ways for relationships to work well is to have a sense of centered understanding that, you know what, ultimately what I need, I'm going to have to get from the fountain of life himself. And when I start to understand some of that, then I can enjoy the people around me. But I won't be expecting them to provide what they cannot provide me.
You know what surprised me significantly, though, in a lot of my travels of late? I'm meeting a lot of wonderful married couples sharing a journey. Some of them are like 5 years married, first time in their young 20s. Others are 40s and 50s. And I say, how'd you guys meet? And I'm surprised by the number of people who say, well, it was an internet dating deal. And they're kind of like embarrassed, apologetic. and you know what? I can't help but think, and I used to be kind of, I felt like, you know, you just said, it's kind of, you know, fragmentation of our culture. People are finally having to do that online. But you know what? I think what singles are finding is there's tough places to meet people. Unless you go to a bar or club and hang out. It's the religious club or the alcohol serving establishment on the corner, it's tough to meet people in our culture because people are so busy and fragmented. And I actually think if you're not there with the desperation of got to make something work, but I do think it's a thing that God is using to bring singles together. And I think there's a lot of ways if you're not meeting people in your normal life, even people who are hungry for fellowship, if you get on an internet list about people thinking outside the box. We've got one at Livestream some people are on. The forum here. There's a lot of people that meet each other, find out they don't live that far away from each other, and actually end up having some kind of relationship. And I think that's one of the things I'm talking about not doing things out of desperation or human effort, but being intentional about building relationships. And I think the internet can be a wonderful place. In fact, I have many relationships around the world. Many of the folks that we've interviewed for you on the podcast I met on the internet. I mean, I've met just sharing the kinds of things that I'm passionate about and being in touch with people who are passionate about the same things. And I think it's a wonderful tool that God can use to bring people together, whether it's just for community or even potential spouses.
Oh, I think the internet is a fantastic tool. But I do think that there is the challenge in our culture that there are not a lot of places in which you can go and just partake of relationships.
Yep. Oh, no, that's true.
And, you know, I think that because of just the way our culture has kind of evolved into what it is, that's what's missing. I think the resurgence of coffee houses is not just the caffeine addiction, but because if you go and you take a look at most of those places, what's happening? It's relationship. People are meeting there for the purpose of being able to talk. Coffee's incidental to it, unless you're talking at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
And there's like, I just need to make it through my commute, you know?
Yeah, but you also got people who show up there together or meet there together. It's not a place where people are meeting new people. You don't kind of walk up to a group of people talking around the coffee shop and join the conversation. I don't think that happens too often.
No, but I mean, if you've ever, like, you know, back especially when I was pastoring, one of the things, just because I didn't usually meet people in my office, I met them more out and about around in town. You sit at a coffee shop long enough and you recognize there's a community of regulars.
Yep.
That it's not just a bunch of people coming together. I mean, it is sort of the Cheers phenomenon of, You know, they want to go someplace where they're known. And a lot of times it is just individuals who regularly frequent a place, and relationships come out of that. I mean, I remember just by my being in the same locale for a long time, talking to various different folks, I had one stranger finally come up and said, "Who are you? And what do you do?" Because they saw me, the turnover of people I was actually talking to. And so it was fun. And
you just can't hold a friendship.
Yeah. But the reality is if you want to make friends and you demonstrate yourself as friendly and available, there are places, whether it's through the tools that you have on the internet, forums and different places there, or whether it is simply going like, you know what, I'm going to find out where life is happening in my community, and I'm simply going to intentionally involve myself in it. You don't have to be alone.
No, that's for sure. And I think one of the things I would want to encourage married couples, and I think in the structures that we have, I think it's easy for married people to find each other, single people to find each other, and there's always kind of married groups, singles groups, and marriage with kids the same ages, involved in the same athletic kinds of things, and they're just busy and complicated. One of the things Sarah and I have done, and I've noticed this one, I don't know that I've ever been to your house where some other singles haven't been hanging around, dropping in, dropping out, doing whatever. I think healthy married couples, one of the things they can do is make room in their lives for singles.
Yeah.
Sarah and I have always just said this, hey, you can come over as much as you want. You call us a couple hours before. We'll throw on an extra or whatever happened for dinner. You can join us. Come over on your bad days, your great days. Just, we've always had a single around our family at any given season that we just kind of not adopted as some kind of needy person, but just gave them an expression of family life. And our kids grew up as great friends with these people. And they're different ones in different seasons, because depending on who was getting married and other things that happened. And many of those married off, and we had a great time being part of that with them too. But I do find folks that are kind of outside of traditional structures seem to have less of a preoccupation about getting with people that are like me, in the sense that are they young married or have kids or whatever, but really do, whether they're singles or older couples or whatever, older singles, really have a sense, if we're sharing this passion for Jesus together, we don't really, it doesn't matter whether our kids are in soccer together or not, or whether you're married or not. And I find when I travel around and visit a lot of these people, whether it's single or married, older, younger, people on this journey find enough commonality in who Jesus is that those other distinctions are not near as important. And I think that's something to even think about, be intentional about. Open up your life to other people. Invite singles to be part of your life. Invite them over. And singles, you can do the same thing. You don't have to just sit there and wait for some married couple to help you. I think we all, and I know maybe there's only 10 to 20% of us that are, you know, what do they call it, extroverted enough to be that intentional. But I think there's something in all of us. If we got comfortable about who we are in our own skin, and comfortable in who God's made us to be, then we could really participate in the world as a free life. And that would allow relationships to happen with a greater consistency than sometimes people see.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, I look at our own neighborhood, and, you know, there's a handful of different streets and cul-de-sacs. And, you know, some parts of the neighborhood are just known as, man, those people party together. They have a lot of fun. They're always out in the street enjoying each other. They're relating. When they throw a block party, it's like everyone's there. It isn't naked.
That's rare in California, isn't it?
It is. And then there's other pockets where you're just going like, there's not a single front-facing window of most of the buildings.
Yeah, that's my neighborhood.
Where the only time they ever see each other is in the morning commute and in the evening return home, and they don't even know each other's names. They don't know anything. And it's like, you look at those dynamics, and I think both those aspects are reflected in our culture. But it has nothing to do about Christ or Jesus per se, in terms of one is a hub of thriving relationship and the other is, you know, they're somewhat completely isolated and separate. I think it's a question of whether or not you want relationship. And if you do, it's kind of like the laws of farming. You're going to have to sow some friendship in order to reap that.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the challenges that a lot of people have, at least towards the quote, in the box, out of the box, all that other stuff is that they've oftentimes relied on the institution of church to somewhat do the work of gathering so that I can come and then hopefully find like-minded friends. And I don't think that's wrong. I think one of the things I recognized while I was pastoring is most of the people were there for the purpose of relationship, not because they were so profoundly spiritually hungry.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sitting there.
Or even if the performance was all that good.
Just pouring it out as if, you know, it's my sermons that will change lives. And I just recognized most of these people are really here because they are hungry for relationship. And I think that's wonderful. That part of me, you know, I have no angst with the institutional church in terms of the dynamic that it does facilitate relationship for a lot of people. And if and when it does, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and many of the kinds of relationships, even some of these people that we've interviewed for the folks from Dublin, whatever, they were in that kind of arrangement together, and that is how the relationships began. And that they've spilled out of it and maintained the relationships and maybe maintained them because they spilled out of it, I think is a great story. But I encourage singles, and if you just can't find believers to connect with, being out of the box doesn't mean I never go to that place. It just means I don't live the systems of institutional Christianity. I don't live with a system of religious obligation. That's the system. If you want to visit some of those places to find some people that may be like-hearted, I never discourage people from doing that. I think it's a great place to find people, and you're going to find hungry people there. Don't go from there for the purpose of undermining it or, you know, bleeding off people who are dissatisfied. But I do think that however God wants to bring people in your life, that is something not just that you want for you, that is something he wants for you. And then how does he bring that about? Follow what he puts on your heart. Now, as I said, the reason I was in that place that Sunday morning we met, I was in the shower one morning, and I felt like God said, I want you to go be with those people today. And I don't want to go be with you. I don't want to walk in there for anything. And, you know, with all the things I've written and said and done, you know, it'd be betraying my audience kind of crap. And no, it wouldn't be. Because God's just saying, what I hope we're communicating to people is do what God puts on your heart to do. Don't have rules about being in or being out or certain things that you have that shape what you think God wants you to do. Listen. Listen to him. And when he puts something on your heart, give it a try. My goodness, it's not going to be the end of the world if it turns out to be wrong.
Well, I think that's the central thread of everything. I mean, if you try to pull a through line through just about anything we've talked about, at the end of the day, this life is lived out in that relationship, in that dialogue with Jesus. And any time you put anything or anyone as a substitute in that place, you're not going to experience the kind of life he's calling us unto.
Absolutely.
You know, but I do think it takes some definite intentionality. You and I didn't become friends because we bumped into each other in a holy moment in a meeting.
You know? Said, let's do a podcast.
Yeah, it's like there was a friendship that took somebody picking up the phone, and it had to be reflected both ways. I think one of the most important things that I could say to folks that are just going like, I don't like being alone, whether you're single, married, or whatever. The reality is you can facilitate people getting together. It's one of the simplest things you can do that could just reap tons of life is have people over for a barbecue, have them over for a shared dinner where there isn't an agenda other than somebody organized a time and a space for a handful of people to gather, and then you just let it go.
Yep.
It's like life doesn't happen around the organized meeting, but it does happen before and after.
Yeah.
And there's some real ease where you just think of, you know what? I think we are called as followers of Christ to live shared lives. I think that's the call I hear.
Absolutely.
Is that, you know, it isn't just me and Jesus. It's me and Jesus and the world that he loves. And I think one of the difficulties when you're stuck within just a system is that you start defining, you know, people by the nature of that system, whether they're in or out, or, you know, whether they're Christians or non-Christians. I'm going like, some of the most fascinating relationships I have right now are not with other Christians. They're just with people. And I'm not really looking at them as, well, is this a believer? Am I, you know, I equally yoked? Am I, you know, am I fellowshipping light with darkness? You're just going like, you know what? I have light. I have life inside me, and I'm wanting just to share it. And in the context of not worrying about whether this is someone who has sealed the deal, signed the deal, or whatever, and you just relate to those people, life opens up. And I find that the agenda-free relationships are the ones that I absolutely adore.
I think that's a big part of this. Whatever relationship that we're involved in, whether it's just people to people or spouse to spouse or person to potential spouse, is getting the agenda out of it, because agenda just kills relationship. If it's the desperation of a prospective partner, if it's I've got to get my wife or my husband on the same journey I'm on, whatever agenda we bring to relationships kills them.
Yeah.
Because it is the opposite of it. And whatever reality we bring to relationship, I think, feeds it. I think one of the hard times religion has incubating relationships is because religion really teaches us to pretend to be what we're not. And the hunger that we have to know people. People, we can be with people, and people don't know the real me because I never let the real me out. I smile and I laugh at jokes that I think will make me popular in the group. But I'm never just authentically who God made me to be. And I've had many people in my journey that I've talked to and helped through things like this that just had a difficult time being themselves around people. And that's a real relational disconnect. And they wonder why 10 years out, man, I'm with all these people, but I don't have any friends. So one of it, be intentional. Yeah, grab a phone, invite somebody out to lunch, dinner, you know, go play around the golf with somebody. Go do things with others because you're intentional. But I think that's a big deal. Let God remove the agenda from it so you don't have to, you know, push it to where you want it to go. And then watch where God takes it. Watch what God does to bring relationships. And people like Lori, I tell you, if anybody out there single and saying, man, I have a desire to have a significant other, to be a mate, to live my life with, I tell you what, I honestly share that hunger for you. I share that passion for you. And I think as you just live deeply in God, He knows it too. And He'll take care of it. And He'll arrange it as you just have the freedom to follow Him.
Yeah, He'll provide opportunities to respond to those positive opportunities. I think one of the things that you just look in conversation, when you talked about agenda, the conversations I have today are different from when I was, actively pastoring. Because I developed a new thing called ears. As opposed to just being the big mouth that always has something to say, I find myself going, like, you know what? I am more interested in listening. And because of that, I think I am finding relationships more rewarding and being facilitated far easier, because I don't come at them with something that I've got to, quote, say.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in, I'm curious where this conversation is going.
Yeah.
I'm curious about what wonderful insight might just pop up into the midst of our conversation, because I don't have an agenda of where I'm trying to take it all the time.
That was the big one for me. I mean, I could listen to people, but it was always about how do I make them part of this machine, part of my success, part of my – and it was just suffocating.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, even when – I mean, it's interesting, you know, because we're in our community quite a bit, and I coach a lot. And so I'm starting to, you know, it's hardly impossible to go to the grocery store without some little kid like, hey, coach, you know, and it's fun because you sort of feel like we are knit into our community.
Yeah.
And we love that. Kelly is, you know, helping out at school, all that stuff. Well, what comes out of it is a joy of being able to just relate to people without having to, quote, get them someplace. But then we'll bump into folks who, you know, they're passionate about the little club that they're going to, the church that they're at. First question is, oh, so, well, you know, you going to church anywhere? And then it's like, well, you've got to come with us.
That's right.
And I'm going like, okay, for the sake of relationship, I might even consider that, quote, I've got to come with you. But the focus is, I want to go with you. It's not the where we're going.
Right.
And not being within that structure, it sort of just afforded me a freedom that I don't have to, quote, gather more folks unto the thing we're doing.
Right.
I can simply relate to them in the world that they're in. Yep. and from the world I'm in.
Yep. So, Lori, you certainly have our prayers. And for some of you have written just saying, hey, my spouse isn't on the same page as in this journey as I am. You know what? You can love and cherish your spouse even if they're not even believers, much less if they're not seeing this journey in the same way. And I'm telling you, when the work God's doing in you makes your spouse a more significant, cherished part of your life, then that relationship is going to thrive no matter what. If it's got to be, I need to get them to see what I see so they can live in this freedom, then you know what? I'm not sure we're living in that freedom either. I think then the box, being out of the box, has just become another fad for us to be on. And I just don't think we need it. Sarah asked me the other night, she said, you know what, I want to invite, and her job is changing. She got moved to a different school, but before she knew she was going to be moved next year, she wanted to have all the counselors, administrative staff, and their spouses over for dinner one night and have this big dinner party. Just to have relationships, just to, no other agenda. We're not going to share Jesus with them, you know, unless that spills out of the conversation. But we're just basically wanting to build relationships with people. And I think that's a fabulous thing. And people doing it can make a big difference.
Yeah. You don't have to walk alone at all.
You don't. And certainly that's something God needs to do in you. And we pray that he does it as he leads you ever onward in this journey.
Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your comments or your questions by email or at our website, thegodjourney.com. Stop by today and join the conversation.